This is Surviving the Music Industry.
That sounds sick.
I didn't think about how that sounded.
Heyo, welcome back to this crazy headspace of Surviving the Music Industry. I'm Brandon Harrington, and folks, light them up, smoke them up, toke them up. It's 420, baby. I'm not that big of an avid smoker. It's not even like a real thing in my head. But you know, if you got a sativa, I'm down. I'm always down. Indica, not so much. Not my thing. Don't judge me. Don't prejudge me. Welcome to the show, everybody. If this is your first time, this is Surviving the Music Industry with Brandon Harrington. You get to listen to me survive this thing, and then I get to have pretty cool conversations along the way. Today's convo, smoke roll, please. Pony Bradshaw. James is his Christian name, so we get down. Get to know James and his music. Calico Jim came out a lot of bit ago, to be honest with you. There I go. Always speaking hyperbole. This is a thing that I'm realizing that can cause trouble and not too much anxiety for me. I just kind of feel like it's not being the most authentic me most of the time, but sometimes like this exaggeration thing, it runs in my blood. My grandfather, oh my gosh, he had a way of saying things. I only wish I could remember like half the things he said, but it was the most like redneck, like country trailer park things. We never lived in a trailer park, but it was just like, see, there I go again. It was just a thing of, he just had a way of saying things, and it was so unique and unique to him, and I think I kind of inherit that a little bit, not as much as him. He was way better. Cool little factoid. He sounded just like Hank Williams Sr. And so I think the story is that he got the open for Hank Williams, or he opened for the opener of the open of Hank Williams Sr. I don't know. But anyway, he wanted to do the thing one day, but he never did. So there you go. That's my life, people. Things are reeling. Things are kind of going through the headspace right now. Not too much is going on with me. My mother-in-law is in town in its current status. I got a rad mother-in-law. So, I mean, there's no headspace junk there. I'm trying to think what the latest mind shake is. Oh, my gosh. Why are we talking about this? Dogecoin. Okay, if anybody, like, follows the stocks. So Dogecoin, it was a meme, it was a joke, ha 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 ha, and it was a thing that it wasn't even supposed to take off, but Elon Musk, Mark Cuban, a bunch of people said, hey, you should invest in this cryptocurrency, and I got on board at 7 cents. It went all the way up to 42 cents a share. I didn't sell at that point because everybody's saying it's going to go to the moon. But right, I think it only went that so far as high as like 42 cents. I sold what I had at, I don't know, where was it? I don't know. I made $200, whatever I put into it. So I made something. And I thought, you know, while it's a little bit down, I'll go ahead and invest some more, just see what happens. Because even if I break even, I'm happy. So I put a lot more in the second run. But there's supposed to be a big thing on 420. Who's going to make this happen? Who's going to make me the next, like, I don't know, Rockefellers? Am I going to be the next Rockefeller? Thank you, people. Should I use my platform to tell you people to invest? I don't know. But Dogecoin, D-O-G-E, if you want to help me become rich, help you become rich, invest, invest, invest. No, I'm just playing. This is only, I've dabbled in stocks a little bit. I only have a few that I kind of just let sit, but I'm reeling right now because most of you know that I kind of record these ahead of time, and the stock is not working in my favor right now, so I'm holding on. I'm holding on because everybody says 420. Today is the day. I'll let you know in a post if I'm the next Howard Hughes. We'll see. Oh, all right, folks. You know it's that time. We're sponsored by BetterHelp, all right? So just to fill you in on everything that's going on, I signed up. I have my first appointment soon, so I'll let you guys know. I'm including you guys on my journey to mental health. So it's no doubt that everybody's living in this most complicated space and time right now with anxieties and isolation and even some complex thoughts. What about even some goals? You got some career goals, you got some money goals, you got goals that you just want to work through with somebody else. They can meet you right where you're at to help you meet your goals, no matter where you're at right now, how you're feeling. The people at BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. It's not a crisis thing. It's not a self-help thing. It's professional counseling done securely online or by phone, so you don't have to sit in one of those stiff, awkward waiting rooms. We all know the first step is getting help. It's the hardest thing. The first step is always the hardest thing to do. But I just want to let you know that just because you're listening to me, SMI, and listen to anything else in the American Songwriter Podcast Network, we're giving you 10% off your first month just by visiting our sponsor, BetterHelp.com/songwriter. So join 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/songwriter. That's probably the most live professional read I might ever do. Oh, but guys, I got to know Pony. Got to know Mr. Pony, Mr. Bradshaw. His Christian name is James. We got to know him. Fun factoid I discovered in the episode. We were basically neighbors at one point, so that was fun, and which totally makes sense from his record, Calico Jim. This thing's been out for a while, for a long time, and we only sat down. It's been months, and this kind of got pushed back just a little bit, not too much, but finally get to release it. But the album's been out. It's on every streaming platform. I think that's the most important thing, that you can listen to this thing, and it's been out. And it's a fun ride. It's not a concept record by any means, but it brings in elements and concepts of geography and culture. And James and I, we talk about it. Buzz? Can I call you Buzz now? That's another nickname. That's what you get when you live in the South. You get called different things. Some are good, some are bad. I mean, we all know what I'm talking about there. But on all major platforms, you can listen to this thing. But I think the biggest thing that you can do right now is that you can go to his website and check out even more, ponybradshaw.net. And there's some rad vinyl, too. I'm a vinyl guy. Some people know this. I'm really into vinyl. It's my dad hobby. It's my thing right now. And so you can go to ponybradshaw.net/merch and check out the vinyl. This would be a pretty rad vinyl, I have to say. I wonder if he's got any tour dates. Should we mention any tour dates, Pony? I mean, some people are back to work. Are you back to work yet? I always love going to his website because it's got a big old map. That kind of person. Okay, so there's a tour link. All right, hey, there's some tour dates. Look at this guy. Look at that. Things are getting back to normal for the old Pony. Eddie's Attic, May 28th. 7 p.m. Good for you. All right, that just means things are getting back to normal, people. I'm happy for people like James and others that are getting back some kind of sense of normalcy. And especially in music, this is the thing. So May 28th, he's in Eddie's Attic if you're around that area. And then that's in Georgia. And then also, let's see, Doheny State Beach, Dana Point, California. So if you're on the left coast, go check him out there. September 24th, so there's time for that one. There will be some more dates, but you know, folks, it's baby steps. We had a long way to come from to get up to this point. So take it easy. Take it easy. All right, so here's my conversation, Pony Bradshaw.
Yeah, my room, I haven't finished painting. I get a little lazy sometimes.
That's all right, man.
And sorry, I'm late. I've usually, everyone I look at is usually like 3 hours difference, 2 hours difference. So I thought I saw 1:30 or 2 or something on there, or I thought I saw 11, but I thought that meant 1. You know, I was doing the math for like California time or something.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, we're doing this thing over Zoom, which I fucking already hate because it's Zoom, right? So, but also at the same time, wait, what time zone are you in?
You're in Nashville.
Yeah.
It's 11:30 here.
Okay. Yeah. So, dude, the time zones and the technology and the Zoom. I get it. I 100%. That's why I'm not even angry at you whatsoever. Because yeah, I've been there.
Called and I was just sitting in my recliner watching TV. And I'm like,
oh. another podcast. I'll wait a little bit longer. It's fine. No, it's fine because I was listening to Calico Jim, and I got to Hillbilly Possessed, and I never thought about it until now. But have you seen Alabama Snake? Do you watch like documentaries? Do you just watch a ton of TV?
It's on HBO. I recently just watched that. Yeah,
dude, there's moments in that song like it reminds me of that.
Well, I believe it's based on that Sand Mountain book, which yeah. I was thinking of when I wrote the song. So yeah,
should that's be. Incredible. Yeah. So you're in Georgia, right? This is you. This is home.
This is home, North Georgia, Maury County.
Okay.
Big city living.
Wait, is this a new space then? I mean, you're painting back there.
No, I had some paint left over from painting the kids' room. I said, I'll just paint my room too. So, yeah.
Wife, kids, the works, North Georgia. This is home for you.
Yep. Been here 16 years, I think. And it's home. It's where I'll expire, I'm sure.
Yeah. That's commitment. I don't know if I have that same commitment to home.
I definitely did. Always. Yeah. I was on the road living in everywhere. I grew up on the road. My dad was in the Navy, so we travel all the time for his work. So yeah, this Georgia thing is the first time I really just stuck some roots in and stuck around, you know.
Navy baby. You're messed up already.
Yeah,
right. Right. I mean,
I joined the Air Force myself too. So
oh really?
Yeah. I didn't last long though. So
why didn't that last long? What was that then?
I wasn't old enough to listen to people tell me what to do all the time. You know, I wasn't having it. So I got kicked out after 2.5 years.
Oh yeah. Shit, James, I'm dealing with. Yeah. I had no idea about this edge about you. I love it though. But I mean, to get kicked out of the Air Force, I mean, you really got to fuck shit up. Right.
Yeah, I was underage drinking and fighting all the time. So, yeah, it was terrible. I would never be that guy now, you know, but.
That's a different person.
Yeah, you know, that was over 20 years ago. I'll be 41 this year. So, yeah, it's a completely different person. I guess some people never change, though, you know.
There's quite a few people I know that haven't changed. I might be one of them, if I have to be completely honest with you. I still have this immaturity in my head, but. Yeah. I don't know. There is something about like being 40, I feel like, and looking back and saying, oh, that's a completely different person. That's not even me.
Yeah. And I think ended up here in Georgia, it was like a clean slate for me. You know, I didn't reinvent myself, but I didn't have all the baggage anymore of my past and all that shit, you know? So
tell me about dad, because was he a lifer? Is he a lifer Navy guy?
He almost was. He was in for like 16 years and just said, see ya. I don't know why. I guess he didn't like it much, but he stuck around for some reason that long, you know? So I don't know.
Yeah, that is interesting. 16 years. It's like, if you're going to stick it out for 16 years, why not just go for 20, get that pension. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't think he had a personality kind of like mine. And I think it was a hard 16 years for him though, you know?
Mm.
Yeah.
What about mom? Is mom a thing in your life?
Yeah, she actually moved to Georgia a couple years after I did. Her husband passed away and she was alone. And I just said, move here. And she lived with us for a while, first 3 years. And then she picked up, she was a personal trainer my whole life back home in Texas, where I grew up, East Texas. And
we're from East Texas. I didn't know that.
I grew up outside of Texarkana. In a small town called Redwater. Yeah.
Are we neighbors, dude? Seriously, I'm from Ashdown, Arkansas.
Oh, shit. My dad's from Pea Queen, Arkansas. That's hilarious, man.
That is such a freaking small.
Yeah.
That's it. You smell it, you know, when you're near it.
Yeah.
I never say Ashdown because nobody ever really knows what I'm talking about. So I usually say Texarkana, but if you're going to spit out Redwater.
Yeah,
so I'll just tell you Ashdown.
I know Ashdown too. Yeah, that's funny, man. How old are you?
35.
You know Corey Chandler? I think he was around
yes.
that. Yeah, he worked at the gym where my mom worked at too.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. And so, okay, you're from East Texas.
Yeah.
And dad was in the Navy. So you were born in Redwater, Texarkana.
I was born in Mississippi, man. It could get.
Oh. Dude, okay. You're all over the place. Yeah. And that makes sense. Okay. Oh, wow. Man, I'm just kind of blown away. I'm kind of knocked back for a second.
Yeah, that's weird. Huh?
Well, because my thing is like, I mean, how many people do I know that do the thing and like get out of it? You know what I'm saying? Like there's few and far in between us. Like, do you happen to know Derek Wells, guitar player, like from Nashville?
Yeah.
Like his dad, his dad's from Ashdown. And I always get the thing of like, have you met him? Because he's Dolly Parton's guitar player, producer. And it's like, no, I haven't met Dolly Parton or his or her producer. So
It's strange. Yeah. It's weird for sure.
I don't know. I feel like we're kindred spirits now. And honestly, like listening to your music, it all completely makes sense. Because like even when I listen to Dope Mountain, it's like, who has that vernacular? Who has like those certain words and how to say them, and they make sense without just making them up, like reading a Faulkner book or whatever.
Yeah, I believe in colloquialism and your regions talk. And, you know, people, I think some interview recently asked me why I chose to write in that Southern kind of vernacular way. And I'm like, I didn't really choose it. It's just the way we talk, you know? So it's, if I lived in New England, I would be writing in that way, you know, or whatever. So
you wouldn't pronounce your R's. And
But some people do. Some people change it to make it, you know, grammatically and it all correct when they sing. And I just choose to sing how I talk, you know, that's how it works.
Now, have you always been like this? Because honestly, I just know of Pony Bradshaw. So like, I want to know who James Bradshaw is all the way up to like Pony.
Well, man, music was not my thing growing up. I played baseball and, you know, all the sports up until high school. But baseball was the thing I focused on. And I didn't know, there was one dude that played guitar at a talent show in high school, and he played Tears in Heaven, I think. Just, he didn't sing, he just played it. It blew my mind, you know. I never knew a musician at all. So I came to music really late. I tried a few times. I tried when I was in the Air Force, when I lived in Colorado. I bought a guitar from a pawn shop and one of those Guitar for Dummies book, you know, and it didn't work. I couldn't figure it out. But after I got kicked out, I moved back home to Texas, and a buddy of mine taught me some chords, and I never really took it serious. It was kind of a party thing, you know, girls and stuff like that, which is the total opposite of why I do it now. But yeah, I mean, I was wild and living on couches all the way up until I moved here, man. I had no focus. I couldn't keep a job. I went to Fire Academy Culinary School in Austin. I couldn't figure it out, you know.
I mean, to me, you sound like an elder millennial. Like you're just trying to figure it out. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I feel like there's more people like us than what we really realize.
Yeah, it's frowned upon to be so scatterbrained if you're 40, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. My parents or my mom, she's on board with it all now, but she's always wanted me to have a job with the insurance and all that stuff. You know what I mean? Just 9 to 5. So,
but I mean, you tried it, right? I mean, you joined the Air Force. Like if somebody's going to like sign the papers for the Air Force, like to me, there has to be a moment of commitment.
I worked a job here too when I first got to Georgia for 9 years in the office. So yeah, I've tried it for sure.
Why do you think it just never like clicked? Like, was it just a headspace thing, or was it more of like, I'm just, this isn't me? Or I mean, really, what was it?
Yeah, I guess a lot of things though. You know, I wrote on a Word document behind my work while I was at computer. I'd be typing and writing lyrics and stuff like that all day long, you know, like all day. My work suffered from me writing songs and stuff. So even when I was there, I couldn't focus in on it. And somewhere along the way, I realized that giving my time away every week is for shit money just didn't seem like a good way to live, you know. And I might eventually have to go back there. I hope not, but I'm trying to stave it off as long as possible. I like owning my time, and music allows me to do that as long as I'm making, have an income, you know, which I'm lucky enough to have. But it's not a lot. I've learned to live with little. I can't take vacations all the time like a lot of families do, you know. But I feel like my kids have an interesting perspective on what an adult can do for a living. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it opens up the possibilities of, well, I don't know the atmosphere of North Georgia, but if it's anything like Texarkana or Ashdown, like you're kind of limited. You know, you saw one thing and this was it. Like you go to work and you go to do that thing. But to see somebody like actually do something else, like outside the culture, is pretty mind blowing. It's mind boggling to a kid. Like they can't even understand it in a way.
Yeah, they don't. My youngest son, he, some little book where they ask you, it's like a fill in the blank. What do you want to be when you grow up? Where do you want to live? How much money do you want to make? And his three answers were, I want to be an artist, I want to live on a mountain, and I want to make $1,000 a year. And I was like, dude, just watch
that's
me.
The lot.
Just watch me. I'm doing it. $1,000 a year. Yeah, but he's funny and he's a great, he draws and he's working on painting. He likes to draw more than painting, but so I do think it seeps in what I'm doing in their heads. But yeah, like you said, though, it's the exact same model as Ashdown, Texarkana, go to work, factory, get the insurance. You know, it almost looks like East Texas, except there's mountains here. You know, it's the only
yeah, thing. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, okay. I understand that culture then. Yeah. Then, like, okay, so you're couch surfing as a teenager.
Ooh, or up I guess, to 45, yeah.
Up to 45. I mean, like, I mean, really, I mean, like, were you just kind of just doing shows? I mean, were you trying to do an artist thing, or was it just really like, I'm just out here in the space. I'm just here to do whatever.
No, I was doing that up till I was 25 when I moved to Georgia. No, I thought I was a rock star and I didn't ever played a show, barely have written a song, but I could drink and I could do all those things that I thought were what made you an artist. You know what I mean? That's just dumb young stuff. But yeah, I never did. And I didn't start playing shows until I was 35, probably.
Oh, wow. So yeah. Even like, your own music, like you were writing during this time, like this growing up stage?
No, I started writing, like trying seriously to write probably when I was 26, 27 at those office jobs.
At those jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Then I did an open mic in Chattanooga when I was like 32 or something, 33. Yeah. And that kind of gave me some affirmation that maybe what I was doing was okay. Yeah. Or good, you know, and then I just kept moving on from there.
Then what was that moment then? Because that seems special to me. Like what happened in Chattanooga for you to like just hop on stage?
I don't know what drove me to, I was writing and I guess it's a natural instinct to, when you make something, to share it, you know, and an open mic was, you just sign up and go. So you didn't need any kind of resume to do it. You just, anybody could do it. And I did it, and it turns out when you get there, it's, you sign up and it's a dang contest, you know, and you win money at the end of the night, and it's once a week. And I think my first and second time I won, and I was like, what the hell, you know, this is weird. And then that just gave me confidence to keep going, you know, and then I got obsessed, which I tend to do about
it's affirmation. It starts it's a poison. That was your first injection.
Yeah, and then, and for a while I had a chip on my shoulder, you know. I'll show everybody who doubted me, you know what I mean, that type of thing.
Right. I mean, it seems like you would be. I mean, I don't want to make any judgments because I'm still trying to get to know you, but I mean, you just sound like that guy, like to get kicked out of the Air Force, you're floating around, you're trying to just figure things out. I mean, you do have a chip on your shoulder, right? You feel like you have it figured out as a young dude, but you really don't.
Yeah, going in to my young life, my parents divorced, I hated my stepdad, all those things that when you look at someone's behavior like mine was in my, up until my late middle 20s, it all makes sense when you dissect it, you know, so just had to get past it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Also makes great songs too. It gives you a perspective in a way.
Yeah, I've gotten a lot of perspective in my moving around and different different, just meeting different people, not for fun, just the way it happened. You know what I mean? And I think before I was 12, we lived in California, born in Mississippi, Texas, all over. I went to like at least 10 elementary schools and middle schools, you know? So I was always the new kid, always having to figure out how to survive, you know? Dudes don't like the new kid if a girl likes them, you know what I mean? And right. Girls like the new kid. So it was always tough moving around like that. But so yeah, I learned how to survive, which I worry about with my kids these days. It seems like they haven't really easy, you know what I mean?
You want to start moving? Create, just give it to them, create a Karate Kid moment, let them be Danielson, get their ass kicked a little bit.
Yeah, I was very adaptable. I could adapt to a lot of things just because I had to, you know, and I learned how.
I can respect that. I own one kid, and sometimes I look at him and I just kind of think, man, I don't know if we would be friends as a kid. Like, I might beat you up, you know, like, which sounds really weird, but it's the thing as a kid, or maybe a father, of like, I kind of want you to get tough. Like, I want you to meet some hardship or something, at least understand that.
Yeah. Or get bored. They never get bored. Oh, and get creative.
Dude, you are like speaking my dad language right now. There's something about boredom to discover like who you are, and my kid doesn't have it whatsoever.
Yeah, they have, you know, we didn't have screens and stuff growing up and all that and internet. So I didn't, you know, but yeah, so they have a lot at their disposal to just to do anything and to never get bored. It's always, when they do get bored, I'm like, dude, come on now. Don't whine about being bored. There's lots of things to do.
Yeah.
Usually we force them outside or we go hiking in the mountains. They love it, you know, so it might fall on me. It might be my fault that I let them do what they do, you know.
Well, how many kids do you have then?
Three.
Oh, yeah. I have one. And most of the time I'm just like, go do whatever you want to do. But having three, no way, man.
Yeah. And that's a lot. 12, 10, and 10.
12, 10, and 10. Now, how'd that happen? Meeting partner?
Yeah, it's my stepson, one of the 10-year-olds, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Wow, man, you're outnumbered.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, even listening to your music, I love this. There seems to be, like, this duality or this something about this observation that I get from you, like, about nature or just maybe even just culture. Like, you just seem like a really good observationist. Like, even when I listened to Sudden Opera, the record before this, I mean, I had to do a dumpster dive. I got to know everything. Yeah. Like, even listening to Bad Teeth, it's like, this guy, like, understands, like, the little nuances of life, or at least he knows how to pick up on them. I mean, is that just the thing of having less and, like, being bored? Like, where does that come from?
Man, that's a tough one. You know, I read a lot in general, but I read a lot of biographies and things like that about certain artists that I like. And when they try to explain it, it's an unexplainable thing. It's not like magical. It's just, but I do think that's what differentiates a songwriter from a good songwriter, someone that has those observational skills and is able to recall memories pretty clear. You know what I mean? Barry Hanna, you ever heard of it?
I have, yeah.
Mississippi. He just said his memory was like perfect. He could recall dialogue, conversations. And I think that's a part of being a good writer in any form, whatever you choose. So I don't know what makes that. I think some of it is just genetic, maybe. My dad was a great storyteller and talker, and he could command presence just by just being himself, you know. And I don't know if he learned it or it's just him, you know. And some of these things you can't explain. I read something, I can't remember who it was, but he said we're all born, well, I don't know if that's accurate. Let me look. I wrote it down, or I typed it into my phone, and I always do that.
No, good.
Let me see here. In the artist, there are two men, the poet and the worker. One is born a poet and one becomes a worker. So I believe that. I really do. You're born a poet, and the artist is two people, the artist, the poet, and the worker. You have to learn how to work, and you have to sharpen that discipline. And so I don't know. It's not so simple, really, to break it down. It's a lot of different things go into it, you know?
Yeah. When I think about that quote, I think that's the first time I might have ever heard it. Like there's something about like all, at least in my imagination, like all man is born a poet. Like yeah. you're coming into this world with an open mind, and you're creating things on your own thing. Yeah. But then sometimes you work too hard and it becomes something else.
Yeah,
like it's not poetry at that point.
Yeah, and lately I've been. Have you seen Beautiful Mind? A lot of people have seen that movie. Russell Crowe.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you're seeing all the numbers up there, and it's. I feel like writing is kind of like that. It's like images and things you're just trying to grab and put them in order. You know, it's. And the people that write good songs are able to grab it and put it in the best order. You know, that's what it feels like, kind of. You know?
Yeah. So when you did that. I mean, when you did this open mic night in Chattanooga, and you had your own songs at this point because you've been writing. You've been writing for years just on your own and in secret. I have a different feeling about that because you said that, you know, you create something, you want to share it. I mean, I create stuff all the time, but there's just some stuff I don't want to share. I like to keep to my own, but for some reason, like your songs, you wanted to get out.
Yeah, I guess some people don't want to share things. I don't know. But I was proud of it. Maybe the pride and the ego, my ego's maybe larger than yours. I don't know.
Well, I mean, if you got a chip on your shoulder, you have to have ego at the same time.
So, yeah, I don't know. I ask myself that still why I do this. And I know more why I do it now. It's because I want to continue to write, you know, and to continue to write, you have to go play shows. That's part of the deal. People that are novelists, they don't have to go out and perform, which would be nice. That would be a nice, I would prefer that path, but that's not what I do, you know? So a songwriter goes out and sings them. That's just part of the job. So I know that that's just what I have to do now. And I enjoy it once I'm out there. Or once I'm on the stage and singing, that couple hours, 3 hours before is always treacherous. It's anxiety and stressful, and then the coming down after playing a show. So, but my favorite part is the creating. But as a songwriter, you have to go perform. You know, it's just part of it. So I've made my peace with that.
It's, I mean, I've heard preachers say this, like church would be great without people. You know, so it's kind of I feel like that too as an artist. Like I've always loved the creative I love process personally.
Yeah.
Like I love to be in my room by myself grabbing those thoughts, whatever, make something. But then part of that, the other side of the process is like the artistic or the artist form, like to actually go out there and do it. Like if I could live my life without that,
yeah, I'd be set. That's the hard part. I'm very, Lord, my words just lost me. I don't like hanging out and going to parties or bars, you know. I don't do that kind of stuff unless I'm playing shows. I'm always at home. I'm a homebody, so it's hard to reconcile the two. You know, it's hard to turn it on. It's like living two lives almost. It's
dude, crazy. No kidding. Yeah, it is a different life or different part of the brain. Like I'm a gargoyle at a party. Like unless it's my thing, I can go do the thing. But then if I'm off stage, I just kind of want to go home. Maybe it's the elder millennial in me. I don't know.
Yeah, or if you drink enough alcohol, then it can be fun, you know. But then the consequences there. So I try not to do that anymore.
Right.
But that's what I leaned on. Not that I was getting hammered all the time, but I would have to have like two or three beers just to even do any communicating, you know, at a show.
I understand that. Yeah, I mean that leads. Are you an alcoholic, or did you say that you are? I don't know.
No, I'm not. Okay. No, I'm not. I drink every now and then. I don't drink a lot. I drink mostly coffee.
Yeah, that's kind of how I am today. Yeah. Dad life. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my biggest thing, especially coming off the road, because it was just like, I mean, I don't know. You could almost drink like a fifth or a fourth. like every yeah. night. And some yeah. guys even more. And that's the thing. That's it. I couldn't do it anymore.
No. It started wearing on me. I'm like, I just got to figure out a way to communicate and socialize with people without alcohol. And it just turned out that I did less of that, which is fine, you know. But now I don't lean on it so much anymore. I like to have a drink or two here and there, and I will, but I'll go weeks without a drink too. So
it's Yeah. Okay. So Chattanooga, when was the experience in Chattanooga? Do you have a year?
Oh man, I can't remember.
Way before 2019, way before Sudden Opera.
Oh yeah. A couple of years before then, probably.
Okay. But at this point you're still James. Right. Pony hasn't coming into the mix.
Yeah. Pony came probably a year and a half before Sudden Opera, or before I signed with Rounder. I can't really remember, but it came out of me and my first guitarist that we started playing together. His name's Craig Pratt. We were going to an open mic at Eddie's
Attic.
Yeah. And we didn't want to just be James and Craig, you know what I mean? And I think he had called me, the story goes, I can't, you know, stories and memories. I don't even know if it's a true story, but he just called me Pony a few times. It's not a very interesting story. And I think he recommended Pony Bradshaw. And it sounds like a band, but I mean, it's still my name. So that's how it morphed into people calling me that, because my last name, you know. But yeah, it never had any big significant meaning. It was just utilitarian. We needed a band name, you know?
And yeah, I love that though, because people try to make this grandioso thing. And in all honesty, it just could have been like what their grandfather called them as a
yeah,
kid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Sometimes it's linked to their identity. Sometimes it's not.
Yeah.
Is there a difference between James and Pony? Like, is it a different guy? Is it a different song? I mean, I know it's all the same person, but for you, especially, it was just out of the nebulous and it was just here.
Yeah, like, it's all the same.
It's all the same. It's hard to imagine, like, having those being separate identities, you know, especially if it's birth story.
It's one thing for sure. And to be honest, nobody calls me James either. I didn't say that to you initially. I didn't want to confuse you, but since I was a baby, everybody's called me Buzz, B-U-Z-Z, and all my family still call me that. So James is my given name, obviously, but I don't even use it except for moments like these.
Your biblical name, Buzz. That, and that's a Southern thing too, like many names. I mean, I've had 20 names. Yeah. As a kid, you know, just growing up in the South, and that's part of the identity and culture.
Yeah, like I signed my name on schoolwork, Buzz, since I was a kid. It's just what.
Oh wow.
Yep, yeah, it's my actual name. It really is, you know. So, but
Pony.
Yeah, Pony is my. I got too many names, man.
I know. Well, I mean, that's interesting with it itself. Like, especially as an artist. I mean, are you still on Rounder?
No.
No, so that moved on. Like, I guess, well, that came Sudden Opera.
Yeah, I got released by my own request because it just wasn't my thing. And it was like a month before this pandemic got really crazy. And we had some shows lined up, like good festivals that paid really great, and a good tour in up Northeast. And it was all in May, and I was going to make a record with all that dough. And it went away. And then I got lucky and met some guys during this thing. I think it was June. I played an outdoor private party show as a duo and in Virginia. And we struck up a friendship. They're brothers, three of them. And we just got talking. They just wanted to help me fund making a record. Then it grew into something bigger. And hey, let's do the whole thing. Let's create an imprint, a label name. Black Mountain Music is what we are. And we did the publicist thing, you know, the radio thing. We tried to do it like a label would do it, but without a label, like the standard type of label. It's been great, but this is how I wanted to make a record always, just however whatever I wanted to do, you know, not with A&R telling me how I need to do things or a producer telling me how to talk or speak. They won't know what that word is or that melody is. You know, I just didn't want anybody telling me how to do things. So that's why I left Rounder.
Yeah. I mean, Sudden Opera is good. I mean, that's my observation of like, it's good. Yeah. But then when I listen to Calico Jim, it is a different thing. Yeah. But it's only like a year apart. That's what's crazy, or at least the really, I mean, you could be sitting on these songs for I don't know how long from Calico Jim, right? So
Calico Jim was during the pandemic, 80% of the songs. Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
And Sudden Opera was written years before it was released. So it was backwards there, you know what I mean?
Gotcha.
Yeah. We had released a record called Bad Teeth that I'd made in Mississippi, and it had at least six songs that were on Sudden Opera on it. And when Rounder signed me, they froze that record, said, take it down, don't sell it no more. And then took 2.5 years for us to release a record. So, yeah, it was.
Because they couldn't get that money.
Yeah. And it just took forever because they called me a developmental artist, which what they meant is develop my following, not develop the work. You know what I mean? Which I wasn't about. And I didn't work well with others, kind of like the military thing, you know? So
obviously, yeah. But there is something especially to that, though, at least my thread of from Sudden Opera to Calico Jim is that especially, you know, and I even mentioned this to you, like even the vernacular of just Dope Mountain. Again, nobody says that. Yeah. But then, I mean, there was some of that in Sudden Opera.
Yeah, there's hints of it for sure, yeah.
Yeah, and all that to say, like the label, like to me, they were developing you. Like if they signed you, like it's not just your audience too, but yeah. I think they had a lot more hand on you than either you realize or maybe you do realize.
Well, they gave me the time to develop myself for sure. You know what I mean? I sat at home, didn't play shows, and I just wrote all day, every day, and they allowed that by, you know, advance money and things like that. So in a way, they did have a hand in my development as a writer for sure, but not directly. It was an indirect kind of financial help way, you know, that kind of thing, which maybe that's what they consider development. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just to me, it's not a different character. It's the same pony. I just think maybe he grew up, but the crazy thing is there's only like a year difference. But from Sudden Opera, yeah, you did have those songs for years.
Yeah, I had those for years, yeah. Yeah, during that time, I felt like I was in the trenches of writing for probably a year and a half after Sudden was around or just working on songs. So I learned a lot about writing and about what I wanted to say instead of just what came out instinctually. I learned what story I wanted to tell and how to focus in a little bit more on the details instead of just a more universal kind of lyric narrative. You know, I like the details. I like setting. I like knowing where I'm at instead of just some nowhere, you know, and some that excludes some people that can't connect with a North Georgia record. You know what I mean? But so be it. I don't think in terms of how many people can I connect with, you know what I mean? Sounds selfish.
Maybe, but then also it's like to me it's identity. Like when I hear something like that, it just seems like you're secure in who you are and what that means even vocationally.
Yeah, that took all the way up until I'm 40 for sure, which feels good to be okay with yourself and your identity, you know. And I think I struggled with that forever, you know. It's I think that's why I did all the skipping and hopping, and I just could never figure it out, you know, couldn't figure out who I was, not exactly what I wanted to do, just who I was. So,
yeah. But now it feels like this is the most, I mean, I feel like I hear that in the music. It feels like this is the most comfortable of who you are.
I hope so. I hope it comes off that way. Cause that's how I feel for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I get that because I feel like, I mean, listening to you talk even now, and kind of going through the songs. But again, it's just the verbiage and the vernacular. And I mean, dude, it's country music. And I just feel like this is like who you are. Like this seems the most imprinted version of what I might see of a Buzz Bradshaw.
Yep. That's exactly true for sure, man.
I just think about that security and your identity, you know, because, you know, I'm 35. I was hoping to know who I am, but maybe it's the journey. I don't know.
And even the last 5 years, you're 35. When I was 35, I wasn't this close to it. You know what I mean? So 5 years is huge. It's huge.
That's crazy. Okay. So no love loss from Rounder. Moved on.
I've moved on and I know that they don't worry about me. So yeah.
Yeah, they're okay.
Yeah, they're okay in all the industry for sure. Yeah,
that's the shitty thing about, I guess, the industry part of it. Because it feels so personal because, I mean, I remember instances of being dropped and that shakes me. But it seemed like you were so secure in who you were and happy to go in the opposite direction that it wouldn't shake or rock your identity.
Yeah, and they might have dropped me soon after I requested, my attorney contacted the president and said, Buzz wants out, you know, and they were like, yeah, let him go. So obviously they would have dropped me sooner or later, but, or unless I towed the line and started acting right, they might've let me make another record. Who knows? But I didn't want to act right.
Yeah. So, I mean, was it just really a creative difference? Like you really just tried to push more of what you wanted?
Yeah.
Because again, like this record, it's not, there's not a stark difference. Don't get me wrong, but there is a difference. And so trying to push.
In the way I see it, there is a stark, but I know in the listener that didn't write it, there's very close cousins for sure, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just, I wanted to make the record, not a group of strangers telling me how to make it. It just didn't feel authentic. And I mean, what's the point? I mean, I don't understand the point in that, you know? I mean, unless your motivation is fame and finances, I don't know what the point is of getting a bunch of strangers to help you make something, what they call better, you know? I don't know.
No, I understand.
If I was a young man, I would have towed the line and be like, heck yeah, let's do this, you know, in my 20s. But yeah, I started figuring out what I wanted, how I wanted things to sound. I mean, I think when I signed with them, I knew what I wanted it to sound like, but it was cool, man. Getting signed was a really big moment to me. You know, it's just like, man, this is neat. Get to roll with the big dogs. And I started compromising because I thought it was the right thing to do in certain areas. Compromise, you got to give a little. And then I got so far into it that there was no going back. Sonically, the record just got a little too big for me and a little too bright, a little too much going on. And some of the songs I wouldn't have wanted on there, you know what? But without that experience, without Rounder, without Sudden Opera, I'm not who I am today. So played an important role in making me who I am.
Yeah.
I learned a ton too. I learned so much from all those guys. And I still like, and I don't talk with them every day. I talk with Jed Hughes every now and then. And Gary's a good guy. And I would hang out with him now. So we're not angry with each other. It's just creative differences. It's just the way it goes. Yeah.
I love Jed. I liked his record that he put out.
Yeah, I'm so glad he did. He was a big gap of time for making a record.
Yeah. There is like, have you ever thought about like writing a book, or have you wrote a book yet?
I have. I was on the phone with my mom earlier. Whenever I got a call from Sarah saying I missed our time here for this podcast, I was like, oh shit!
I wasn't gonna bring it up, man.
And she was talking about me writing a book, and I was like, I feel like it's something that I would like to do, and I've written certain things, and I feel like you got to give it more time than I can give it. Songwriting would suffer if I focused on writing a book or something. I feel like it would, you know,
I think it would.
Yeah. I need to put my time into and focus into one thing like that, so I don't suffer on the other thing. But.
Well, I mean, that's just part of it. Like listening to this whole record, like, I mean, I remember listening to Guru and just thought, I mean, this is a character. I mean, even the Hillbilly Possessed, like those are two characters, you know, even if it may be just one character, which is interesting to me because I tried listening to this as a concept record, which I don't know your intention with that, but it felt conceptual. Yeah. But then at other times it didn't. And so
it wasn't conceptual. It just, they became, it kind of just started. I don't know. I mean, it's a loose concept. You know what I mean? Like a general character of who, like a mixture of a lot of different people from here into one person. You know, it's not just a one guy or a specific guy or person or woman. And a lot of them were written, I think, like a month, you know, together. So it's, they all are related, a family somewhat, you know what I mean? I think the two that I didn't write were Guru and what else is on there? And Bodark. Those were songs that I had written not during the pandemic. The rest were pandemic songs, And fairly, I know a lot of people don't like to do this, but obviously we didn't play any of those songs live at shows to see how they came off. You know, we just fresh off the desk in my room, straight into the studio, you know. So I like that, though. It's kind of, it's risky, maybe. I don't know if it is or not, but write something and then make the record, and then you're free from it, you know, instead of holding on to it for 2 years.
right. Well, I mean, that creates the almost like the rawness of it, you know, because that fits every song within it. You know, you can't write a song like Dope Mountain and try to like cookie cutter. You know what I mean? Like this describes a rural culture. Like this is it. You know, this is a snapshot of this town, this home. I like the idea of them all being part of a family, like in this small town, because they all do seem so related, even though a couple were written outside. But even the recording of it, it's it does create that effect as well.
Yeah, and it was important to me that the music, the players, the sound wasn't over-stylized and like took a lead role. I didn't want that. But it was important. Everything that they did is crucial. You know, the restraint that they did show that we used for, you know, I don't know. It's I just hear a lot of music and the only thing I hear is just the style, the vibe of it, instead of the weight of the story. And some people don't like narrative songs, or I don't know. It's just, that's what I'm drawn to. And that's what I'm interested in more is, that was one of the things the mantra I mentioned before, less glamour, more nutrients, you know? So.
Yeah. Some people, I was just having a conversation about that with somebody. Like, I guess maybe it depends on the kind of day people are having, like just people in general. Some people don't like the reality. Some people don't like to look in the mirror of what they're faced with every day.
Yep. My mom is the perfect example of, she's like, I don't want to read about this dark, like Dostoevsky. I want to read something that lets me escape, you know, and I've never been a fan of escapism. I like getting down in the trenches and the realism, and because I think it's important. It's how we figure out a lot of big answers, you know, to big questions, and we avoid it. I mean, we're a culture that likes to not come face to face with these big things. And I mean, I know too many people that are like, oh, I don't want that. I don't need anything negative. Or I'm like, it's not negative. It's a movie that's deep, and it might have some dark elements, but it's reality. That's where we live. You know, it's what we do as humans. And I don't avoid it, and I don't dance around it. I just jump in.
Yeah, I feel like we're related in that. If there's an elephant in the room, why are we ignoring that elephant? Like, it's right there. Like, it's that thing. Some people just really like to ignore that elephant.
Yeah, and when I do feel like not, I don't know if it's a conscious thing, but I get my empty kind of consuming. I watch Mad About You, Frasier, Andy Griffith, you know, lighthearted things. I do those things too, you know what I mean? Mm. But I like a mix of high and low culture. It's important.
Yeah, man. Dude, this record is really good.
I appreciate it.
Really,
yeah, man.
Thanks for hanging out. Is there, I don't know, anything else you want to say?
Well, I don't think so, man. No, I'm good.
I love it. That's even better. I said all I said.
Yeah, no, I don't try to hold it back to save it for the end, you know what I mean?
That's good.
Yeah, we're playing a show. I don't like to do, see, I don't even know what it's called. When you call back on stage. Just saying.
Nah, an encore. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, dude, I already gave it all. I gave you my best already.
I gave you an hour. What more do you want?
Yeah.
I mean, really, what more do you want? We were here for an hour. That's it. Now go listen to the music. Calico Jim. It's on all streaming platforms. You can listen to it now. We just talked about the life of James, the music of James, going through the thing. So thanks for sticking with us. James, thank you so much for your time. Go say hi and thanks to him at Pony Bradshaw on most of those social platforms. Go check it out. Use that beautiful search bar. You can figure it out. But you should go to ponybradshaw.net. Go check out merch, some swag. He's got the record on vinyl, apparel. He's got like a red vinyl. There's a Calico Jib with the graphics on the vinyl. Oh my gosh, it looked really good. I might have to buy one. I'm down. All right. So ponybradshaw.net/merch for all that stuff and check out tour dates on his website. Thanks again, James. As for me, while you're riding that social train, be sure to stop at unofficialbrandon on Instagram and the TikToks, at SMI Podcast, Facebook, Twitter, and visit us at smipodcast.com. Drop us a line. Drop us an email. Hate mail is always welcome too. We can always deal with that. Just don't send any mails. That's highly illegal through the mail system. All right, well, that's it, everybody. Again, you always know what to do. If you enjoyed this episode, got something, just share it. That's all I ever ask. But as for me, as for you people, just, you know, be human. Just be the best thing that you can be, for whatever that's worth. Just don't be an asshole. All right, I'm out of here. Happy surviving. Until next time.